Well, people, stop me if you've heard this before. A game played between the Blue Jays and the Twins at Target Field. Kevin Gausman and Pablo Lopez on the mound. It resulted in a win for the Twins in a game in which the Jays had trouble scoring. That was the Cole's Notes, let's call it, of the game on October 3rd, 2023. That was the opening game of the playoffs, which we all choose to forget, perhaps. But certainly I do. And the Cole's Note tonight, certainly as well. August 30th, 2024, the Blue Jays lose 2-0 to the Twins in Minnesota to begin this three-game set in the land of 10,000 lakes. I'm Shohei Lee. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text me as well, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It is always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply when you do text me. Again, 590-590. Maybe we can just play whatever Blair and Barker had said after game one of that playoff game. Actually, if memory serves, the Jays actually scored a run in that game, game one off Pablo Lopez. So situations aside, like, it's a little different. Playoff game versus a regular season game in a lost season. But tonight was probably a little less than when it comes to comparing. Tonight actually was, unfortunately, the most 2023-esque game since, I would say, at least the All-Star break. The offense has looked less lethargic as of late, which is definitely good. I think there is some truth to the idea that, the young call-ups, there's some youth injected into the lineup, some guys who had not yet seen a lot of major league pitching and vice versa. Pitchers had not seen a lot of guys like Clement, Horwitz certainly aside, Will Wagner and Loperfido and so on, all these different guys. But tonight, unfortunately, despite all of that, it's a little too reminiscent, I would say, of the early parts of the season, but certainly definitely reminiscent of last season. And look, I mean, Pablo Lopez, he's an ace, right? Like, even if this year has not been his best overall, he's been filthy since the All-Star break. And he showed, I think, the difference between, and we've done a lot of these shows this year, but between batting against the Angels, for example, and an ace who has been nasty since the All-Star break and a team overall currently in a wild card spot. And hey, I mean, for all of that, the Twins only won by 2 runs. And again, I know it's like sometimes I can be the king of moral victories. But again, I mean, Kevin Gausman was good, if not elite tonight. He got no run support, but Pablo Lopez and I would say Joan Duran and Griffin Jacks ended up being the two most reliable relievers, ended up being the difference for the Twins. But again, the Blue Jays lose 2-0 to the Twins at Target Field. All right, let's talk a little bit about Kevin Gausman. Mainly because I feel like that's like the main thing we have to talk about after a game where the Blue Jays scored no runs. But Kevin Gausman, 5 2/3, 4 hits, 2 runs, both of which were earned, 4 walks, 4 strikeouts, 103 pitches thrown, 58 strikes. So entering this game, I was really curious on how Gausman would work his pitches, because for whatever reason, right, the Twins of all teams have been able to get to him pretty frequently. Like, for whatever reason, they have the book on Gausman's usage of the splitter particularly. Like, they know when he likes to throw it, where it's going to be, the counts and so on. So how do you combat that? Like, how do you avoid getting got when the other team apparently knows you really well? And to start, at least, and things did change as the game went on, and I do wonder if fatigue simply played a factor in this, because he looked like he was drenched in sweat. I'm sure it was pretty hot in Minnesota at Target Field at this point, like late August. It can be pretty muggy there. And he didn't look super comfortable. I'm sure that's at least a factor. But early on, at least, I think the solution to that is you just don't throw a lot of splitters, right? He threw very few splitters early in the game, instead going with some really low fastballs, which, as we know, is Gausman's next best pitch that he's leaned on quite a bit. The four-seamer was being delivered as close to the bottom of the zone as possible, and his command was on point. Like, he was lasering that thing right at the edges of the zone. He was freezing guys early on, maybe guys who had not seen him a lot, like Austin Martin, for example, bit of a younger guy, or at least a prospect who had not seen a lot of major league service time so far in his career. And even when some of the veteran bats started to key up on him throwing low in the zone, he'd also dialed up the velo a little bit, and they were getting some weak swings on the ball. He did start to mix in the splitter a little more as the game went on. It kind of looked like, because he was throwing the fastball so low, the Twins were having some trouble. Again, at least the first time through the order, maybe the first, almost two times through the order, because I think the trouble really came towards the end of the second time through the order for Gausman. But it looked like they were having trouble differentiating the fastball and the splitter, at least out of his hand, and even where it was coming across the plate. So well done to take some of the advantage away from the Twins batters. But of course, you get to the bottom of the fifth inning, started making some mistakes, right? He was pitching pretty well through that point, but he delivers a four-seam fastball right down the middle to Jose Miranda. He smacks it for a hard hit double. And then to perhaps the Twins' most veteran bat, I mean, Byron Buxton, I guess, is up there too, but he's not available right now. So to the Twins' maybe most veteran bat, in Carlos Santana, a splitter just off the plate away from Santana, but he gets a good swing on it, and he kind of just pokes it for the RBI single. And I mean, yeah, I guess Santana has seen a lot of those pitches. The fifth inning kind of snowballed a little bit, right? The Twins came around for the third time through the order, two runners in scoring position, walks, generally speaking, hurting old Gausman there with some, you know, misplaced splitters. And again, I really do wonder if fatigue got him a little bit, the weather, so on. But he limited the damage to just the two runs. And I do understand taking him out when they did. Four walks, the Twins batters became a little more patient as the game went on. And then the guy who did damage the last time up, and Carlos Santana, comes up. Gausman over 100 pitches, looked like he was laboring a little bit. I don't know, it seemed like the right decision. I'm certainly here to quibble about leaving guys out there a little longer, generally speaking, as opposed to how the modern trend of baseball is. But I think it was probably the right move. It's just a shame that Blue Jays didn't give him any run support. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590. On your cell. Let's go to the text line. Let's go to the text line and see here. Let's see. One's from Joe from Huntsville here. And Joe says, with the season gone, it would be nice to see Bo Bichette come back and return to his old self. I miss watching that guy when he's himself. Even though he doesn't want to stay beyond his contract, seeing him dunk bloopers into right field one last time would be a fitting send-off. I think that's a fair reason to want to see Bo. I think it's almost easy to forget, maybe for, certainly not for Joe, but I would say for a lot of people, it's been easy to forget that Bo has been one of the more consistent players on the team prior to his injury. I mean, if you think about it this way, right? With Bo Bichette, if you go back a year, I forget the exact date where he suffered that quad injury, where it looked a lot more serious, by the way. I think you kind of thought, boy, I mean, like that looked like it could have been a season-ending injury. But he had the quad injury at the end of last season, and he had been pretty consistent up until that point of last year, in a year where offense was super scarce. But Bo Bichette got injured, and then it kind of since then, I know there was obviously a whole offseason for him to get right, but then since then, he has really, unfortunately, just been hit with a lot of different injuries that I don't think are that related to one another. Like, is the quad injury related to neck spasms, which is related to calf injuries? I'm not a doctor by any means, so maybe they are. I'm who knows? But I'm going to go on a limb and say no. I think generally speaking, Bo, just a little bad luck injury with the injury bug as of late. So I would like to see him come back. Truly, I would like to see him come back too. And I think too, the other reason I'd like to see Bo come back and play well, there are only a couple weeks left in the regular season. They're 25 games. Jays are now 66-71 after the loss. So there are 25 games remaining in the regular season. Let's say Bo comes back in a week, right? Probably that probably would mean, because there's a couple days off next week. So there's two more games in this series. There's two more games against the Phillies in between that Monday off day, the Thursday off day, and there's a three-game set against the Braves in Atlanta next weekend, like this time next week. So that's, seven games, right? So that means you can get Bo back after the Atlanta series for the Mets series at the Rogers Center. Let's say he comes back for the first game against the Mets. That would leave you with 18 games, if I'm doing the math correctly. Never do math on the air. It's usually wrong, at least for me, because I'm really bad at math. But I think that would leave you with, if there's 25 games to go, that would leave you with 18 games if Bo comes back for the beginning of the series against the Mets at the Rogers Center. So, you know, 18 games is probably enough for you to kind of showcase the guy to a certain extent. No, I mean, and again, showcase seems like a strong word, because I think we all know what Bo is at this point in his career. I really strongly believe that, you know, at some point in the future, whether or not Bo is a Blue Jay in 2025, I have no idea what the answer to that question is. I tend to believe he will not be, but let's just say he is or he's not, whatever the answer to that question is. I have a feeling that Bo, wherever he is, will look back, and we'll all look back on 2024 and say, man, what a completely confounding, flabbergasted year, because it's not something that's very typical for Bo Bichette, right? The other thing too is, let's say he comes back with 18 to 20 games left in the regular season. I really believe that there, if you are intending to trade Bo, then the idea is he's got to play at least a little bit, at least to assure other managers that he's not, you know, and again, I'm going to use air quotes here, injury prone. I don't believe he is, because a large majority of the injuries, again, I think are unrelated, and they came at different, really different points of the season. But you want to make sure that calf is all right, certainly. But, you know, you want to, if you're someone looking to trade for Bo Bichette, and you want to get the form you've seen from him from his rookie season up until like the quad injury from last year. And I know 2022 was weird too. He was quite ungood, let's say, right up until like the end of August, at which point he became like the hottest hitter on planet Earth. But that, even including that, he's still been someone who has been very, very, very consistent over the course of his career, right? So I really do believe that if you're going to get him for the last like 18 to 20 games, and he's going to come back and play every day, you got to think, right? Or near every day. If you're convinced that when he comes back, he's going to be super healthy, then that's got to be, at least for me, that's got to be a reason why you want to see a little bit from Bo Bichette, right? Leo Jimenez has played really well. Not taking anything away from Leo Jimenez. He's played very, very well, and I believe he is a major league player. It just, you know, if you have the option between seeing a little bit more from Leo Jimenez in 20 more games or 18 more games or whatever it ends up being, or seeing Bo Bichette rehabilitate some of his value because he's been injured all season, I think you take the latter, no? At least I would. But Bo Bichette has been so good for so long, I think that's probably is probably where you go. 590-590, name and location. That is the people's text line. Kind of along this, actually. Rob in Vancouver says, nothing about tonight, but Jimenez is next year's shortstop. Flip Bo for something and sign Vlad. Jimenez looks like a shortstop and will flourish, says Rob in Vancouver. So we were just talking about Leo Jimenez, certainly. I think, again, I do tend to think Bo is probably not going to be on the team next year. Probably? Question mark? But Jimenez looks like a major league ball player to me. He really does. Like I got to say, I've been largely incredibly impressed, certainly with his defensive play at shortstop and also with his offense. I think the only thing is we talk about resource allocation, right, Rob? And we talk about like the idea of spending wisely, let's call it. As much as I do think Leo Jimenez is a starting shortstop, I think it would be fair to be somewhat disappointed if you go into next season. And you know what? I will say it does depend on what else happens with the roster. Like if you go into next season and Leo Jimenez is your starting shortstop, you got some prospects for Bo, but Pete Alonso and like Anthony Santander or Pete Alonso and Tyler O'Neill are on the team, then yeah, okay, you're probably happy with that. And it probably doesn't, not that it doesn't matter, but you probably can get by with your shortstop being, you know, a lesser known name, quote unquote, for example. But I do wonder if it's just shortstop being such a premium position. If let's say Bo is not on the team next year, let's just say for the sake of this discussion, okay? If that is the case, then would it not be better for the Blue Jays with all the money they have available? Because in theory, they have almost $100 million available in theory or something close to it. Wouldn't it be better for them to go and again, Willy Adames is going to be at the top of everyone's wish list. He has played extremely well. Even if the Brewers want to keep him, he's going to be paid a whole hell of a lot of money. And he is probably going to be like the shortstop market after Adames is not exactly super robust, let's say, right? So he is going to command the $300 million deal from someone. Like, I don't know if he's going to get like the Lindor deal or whatever that looked like, or if he's going to get the Trey Turner deal or whatever that looked like. Maybe it's going to be something around there, I'm guessing, because he's still relatively young and he's hitting the crap out of the ball. But man, I got to say, I think Willy Adames would look a little bit better than Leo. But I mean, again, that's not exactly a knock on Leo Jimenez. I'll say that. Dan from Cole Harbor. Are we just guessing Bo wants out? Hard to believe he'll just quit on the Jays. He knows he's a part of the problem, so he's staying till they win a playoff series, 3-year contract. Yeah, like in the sense that they signed him to that contract to avoid arbitration and that he's just going to stay until either he gets signed or traded or leaves in free agency. Obviously, those are the three outcomes. Yeah, it's true. We don't actually know Bo wants out, Dan. This is fair. That's like a fair thing to point out. I think the only reason we have these conversations is because of a couple things, right? Bo is one of these guys, and I've only had a very fleeting moments of interactions with Bo, right? I hesitate to even call them conversations, but I think that the problem is we make a lot of comparisons between Bo and, let's say, Vladdy, right? To use these guys as the two polar opposites. Vladdy, for example, his entire career he's just generally like this. He's like a jovial guy. He's pretty outgoing. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. He smiles a lot. He laughs a lot. When he talks to the media, he's always pretty happy. And with the contract stuff, you know, it's always like, bleep the Yankees. I never want to play in New York. I only ever want to play, be a Blue Jay, like open up the pocketbook. I want to stay here for the rest of my life. I never want to wear another team's uniform. He's so like effusive and open with his praise and desire to stay a Blue Jay. And then you have like Bo on the like so diametrically opposed, right? Like he's the complete opposite. And again, I hesitate to use the word taciturn because I think taciturn like has a negative connotation, but I say it with Bo because he's just like, he just does not seem to like talking to the media. Like he's a man of few words. He does not mince words. Let's put it that way, right? Like if you ever see the post-game commentary, they're like, hey, so Bo, how did things go today? He's like, yeah, went well. Yeah, I hit pretty well. The other guys didn't pitch me well. That's how he talks. Like that's just how he communicates. That's not even a bad thing. I think he's probably doing the right thing. Don't want to misconstrue anything you're saying. He's a man of few words. It's not a problem. But I do think because he's never gone out of his way, like 100%, as much as Vladdy, to say, yeah, I never want to leave. I think that's why, right? And the body language hasn't been great this season. I think that's a big part of it. But you know, body language could probably be attributed a little bit to the fact that he's been injured a lot this season. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. You can certainly give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590. Let's take a quick break. Actually, they just had fireworks wrap up at Target Field. Like, we have the screens on here at Baseball Control, and, like, most of the crowd at Target Field stayed in order to, like, have some kind of fireworks show. I have no idea what the reason for that is. So maybe it's some kind of holiday in Minnesota. Maybe they're celebrating something. I truly have no idea. But I think that might be one of the more unique things we've seen. The entire crowd basically stayed to, maybe it's just Labor Day fireworks on a Friday. Maybe that's what it is. Who knows? That was Tom and Nick making that suggestion. And you know what? That's as good a suggestion as I've heard, because I have no idea what else it could be for, unless it's like, I don't know, like the owners of the Twins' birthday or something. Anyways, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll see if we hear from John Schneider and certainly go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. A couple more texts here to get through. Chat about the bullpen a little bit as well. And certainly we haven't talked about the offense, which I don't know how long a conversation that's going to be on a night they scored zero runs, but still, we will still have those conversations on the other side. 590-590, name and location, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. That's the text line as well. You're listening to Jay's Talk, Show Alley with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network. All right, welcome back to Jay's Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali with you here until the bottom of the hour. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. That is the People's Text Line. Standard data and messaging rates may apply, but the People's Text Line is always open. Again, 590-590, name and location. Before we go back to the text line, just want to talk about the bullpen a little bit. And we did see, we talked about Kevin Gausman and you know, maybe how the Twins managed to take advantage of some mistakes from him. But I mean, I don't know, 5 2/3 is something you probably take if you're a starting pitcher. 5 2/3 and 2 earned runs. Yes, 4 walks is never great, but it's a line that most, you could probably win off that line most nights. He gave you a chance to win. Let's put it that way. He did not sink the Blue Jays in this game by any means. Gausman has had a couple of blow-up innings or blow-up starts so far this year, which has not been a year, especially early on, that is up to his very lofty standards. But Kevin Gausman, I mean, he's a guy who has, I think, in the last little, certainly since the All-Star break, but ever since he talked about how pitching has changed and how he changed his arm slot and how he kind of hunches over a little bit more on the mound. And that was a number of starts ago. It wasn't relative that recently, but because of that, he gave you a chance to win, and the Blue Jays did not give him a lot of run support. But I did want to chat a little bit about the bullpen, who also held it down. And we saw Zach Pop tonight and Brendan Little. And I do think going to Zach Pop in that situation, 5 2/3, 2 runners on, says a few things. One, if you're asking John Schneider to construct his circle of trust, Pop is in there. Like, even if he's not in mine right now, he's probably in the Blue Jays circle of trust, certainly for John Schneider, probably because he has not a lot of other options. Because, two, there's just not a lot of other people, period, you can go to when the starting pitcher falters even just slightly, and you need to keep the score where it is. Like, they have plenty of guys you can go to when the score is blown open, either for or against, but not that many guys who can hold things within a few runs. Like, you can't deploy Yenesis Cabrera or Chad Green in the sixth inning. What if you need them in the eighth or ninth? Would you rather deploy Zach Pop then? I'd say no, generally speaking. And you know what? Pop pitched well enough. He's been largely fine. Maybe a little, I mean, certainly tonight, but he was, you know, maybe he's been getting a little hard, let's put it that way. But it is just another indictment on where that bullpen is, that he probably actually is the next most trusted reliever after Green and Cabrera, even over Swanson at this point, I'd say. And I do wonder with Pop what his ceiling is or what he can be going forward. There's so much variance with relievers that you never really know, but coming into tonight, in 7 2/3 in the month of August, he'd given up 9 hits and 7 earned runs. Again, this is before tonight, for an ERA of 8.22. And then, you know, tonight he goes out there in an inning of work over two separate innings. He had the one out, then came in for two more outs later. But no hits or walks. And he does it again with some runners on in the fifth to start as well. So there's clearly something there. But I can't help but think his role is so, like, if you're constructing the 2025 bullpen, there probably is a role for Zach Pop. Right? There's probably a role for him, but is it the highest leverage role for Zach Pop going forward? I would say, personally, I would say no, which kind of a bummer, right? You want to see a Canadian pitcher do well, but I think we kind of know what Zach Pop is at this stage of his career. And again, like, let's face it, he doesn't need to become an elite closer to have a place in the bullpen, certainly, but I do wonder about him going forward. Brendan Little in the same way, too. I feel like for a good chunk of the season, he went, you know, he kind of like took two steps forward, one step back. But ultimately, again, tonight, he managed to hold things at Target Field. Again, against a lineup that where the offense has not played particularly well for the Twins. The Twins had a pretty awful losing streak coming into tonight. And of course, they snapped that. But generally speaking, the Twins are a better lineup than like the Angels, for example. And Brendan Little played pretty well. But again, I mean, we're talking about Zach Pop. We're talking about Brendan Little. Guys who I think in most properly, again, using air quotes here, properly constructed bullpens probably is, they're probably at the back end of the bullpen. They're not the trusted relievers you're deploying to put out fires right when you need them to. And again, there are places for that. Like no bullpen, I would say, or very few bullpens, I would say, let's put it that way. Because there are some really well-constructed bullpens, like the Guardians, for example. But I do genuinely wonder when it comes to next year, if either of them have a place. I genuinely think yes, but at the very end, like they're like, if we're talking about like 10 people, it's or 12 people, there are guys 9 through 12 or in that spot somewhere. But yeah, there's still a long way to go. There's still a lot of room for them to grow. But Brendan Little, Zach Pop, hey, they did the job tonight. You know, didn't get a lot of run support. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Let's go back to the text line. Alex in Toronto making the comparison between Bo Bichette and Mitch Marner. I think it's like a valid enough comparison. I know a lot of people kind of like roll their eyes because, you know, and not everyone who's a Jays fan is a Leafs fan. A lot of people in this city are. Obviously, I'm in Toronto, which is where baseball control is, but that's not necessarily the case everywhere. But I can see it, right? I mean, Bo is, I find Marner to be a little more combative with the media, let's put it that way. Whereas Bo is, you know, he seems a little less interested in the media. There was a text here from, let's see, there's a text here from, oh, here it is. Chris in Scarborough. I appreciate the reply, Chris, because Chris had texted, I think right before we went to break, Chris says, I have little faith in your and others' mind-reading skills regarding what happens with Bo. So I said, you know, okay, if you're going to say that, Chris, you got to let me know what you think what will happen. So Chris says, Vlad and Bo will sign or get traded this winter based on dollars. Reading the tea leaves to try and guess their headspace is fun, but has little bearing on their contract status. I mean, yeah, but if you say like Vlad and Bo will sign or get traded, it's one of those two outcomes, right? Like there aren't any other outcomes. Like, yeah, that's not really like, it doesn't really help, I suppose. I don't know. I just feel like if you don't know what's happening, all you can do is guess, essentially. That's what we're all doing. We're all reading the tea leaves. So I do appreciate the text. Matt in St. Catharines says, if Bo doesn't want to resign, don't play him. Let him find his own suitors with a limited sample size, and let's let the next wave thrive. I see why you'd say that, because you do only have a certain amount of time before the end of this season in which you can play the rest of these guys to find out as many answers as humanly possible, right? Because that's what the rest of the season is about. It's about finding out, you know, if Bo does play, it's about finding out what he is post-injury and if he's healthy enough to play at shortstop every single day. I would say it's even finding out a little bit about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and his ability to play more, at least, he was DHing tonight, but more at third base, for example, than he was at first base, because that would change somewhat the calculus going into next season. And, like, are you comfortable enough at getting a passable third baseman defensively while still getting everything you're getting from Vladdy with the bat? Because that would change if where you're going to allocate resources going into 2025. But, I mean, certainly it's about the youngsters as well. I mean, I think there is still a little bit more to find out about Horwitz and Clement, just generally, but they're both going to be on the team next year. I think that's a given. But you're still finding out a little bit about Will Wagner and Davis Schneider, who has recently lost playing time, Joey Loperfido, and you hope he's okay because he, you know, he banged his head into the wall at Fenway the other night. And so he didn't play after that, didn't play tonight. So you hope these guys are okay, but you're certainly learning more about them as players. I think that's why you kind of need to play Bo. No, like when he does come back, I almost feel like you need to play him just to find out what's there. Because then if you trade him in the offseason after not finding out what's there, then I almost feel like you're trading him at his lowest possible value or like something near the lowest possible value. I think that's the problem for me. Whereas you kind of need, you know, you kind of want to see him play a little bit more going forward. I see a text here from, it was also from Robin Van. He goes on to say, Jimenez does look every part of Major League shortstop. Throw Barger at third base for every game for the rest of the season and see if he can handle it. I mean, you should at least throw him out there more. I don't know if every game, right? Just because you need to get other guys some reps. I mean, I think you want Clement to play certainly as much as humanly possible as well. Again, I think you're still looking to find out a teensy bit more about Ernie Clement, but he's got to play it a little bit. You like, Rob is a big fan of Leo. Leo's got to play a little bit, and he's going to play, he could play at a variety of positions, certainly, but you do have a bit of a logjam in trying to find out as much as possible about a lot of these young guys. Wagner can play at second. He largely plays at second. You might see more DH days for Vladdy down the stretch, so you can get guys like Horwitz at first, Wagner at second, or Schneider at second, or Jimenez at second, and or Jimenez at short, or Ernie Clement at short, while someone else like Barger is playing at third. Like, you have a lot of combinations you can throw out there, certainly depending on who the opposing pitcher is and kind of like mix and match that way to your best abilities. But I am curious to see what Barger's got going forward. Like, he clearly has a rocket launcher for an arm, and he makes the throws from third to first, just generally speaking from third across the diamond. He makes those throws look pretty good. He makes them look pretty effortless. I'll give him some credit. And he's clearly hitting for power. Like, the first time he got called up this year wasn't great. Didn't really acquit himself very well, really struggled to find himself at the plate, and then he got sent down, probably deservingly so. But the second time he got called up, I forget if that was when Kiermaier got injured or if it was when Bo got injured, but he got called up and he has not gone back down since, and he's been playing very, very well. I do wonder how much more we have to see. And you guys can let me know as well. 590-590, name and location. Here for another 15 minutes or so. If you want to give me a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590. On your cell, we'll go to the phones in a sec, but you let me know, like, does Barger have to do more? I tend to believe he will not be a regular contributor to the lineup next season, I'm thinking, but, and again, like, he's still so young, he could very easily change that as he changed the minds of a lot of people going into his second stint, but I do wonder, honestly, like, he has the tools, I just want to see a little bit more consistency. Let's go to the phones, 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Ryan in Innisfil. Ryan, what's up?
Not a whole lot, Joe. How are you doing, man?
Good, man. I'm doing all right. Stay up late, watch the Jays lose. Kind of a tough way to begin your long weekend, but how's it going?
Oh, you know, at least it's consistent.
It's true.
And basically, I'll chime in on the Addison Barger thing quickly, since you were asking. In my opinion, I think he'd be a great bench piece for next season. He quite clearly has a gross amount of power. He can just hone that in and hit the baseball a little bit more. He'd probably be one of the better players on the team, to be honest, because his defense is wonderful. Sometimes he makes like a really stupid lap, but outside of those, like, one of the best arms in baseball, and he can play numerous positions. I definitely see a spot for him on the team next year if Ross Atkins does his job right. And then second thing I wanted to talk about was sort of just like keep it in the game today as far as the lineup goes. One, why the hell is Bo and Barcia leading off? Why? He's literally batting .214, doesn't get on base. What? Why is that your leadoff hitter? I'd rather see Nathan Lukes up there. I'd honestly rather see Jimenez up there. I'd rather see almost anybody up there. And then another thing, if he's going to lead off, the fifth inning is where I'm going to go to right now. When Leo Jimenez hit that single and Dalton Varsho didn't lay down a bunt, you kind of know the game's over at that point. He's literally the best in baseball at laying down a bunt. It might not just be advancing a runner. You could also have two runners on base. Why is he not putting the bunt down? I don't understand that. That's just John Schneider being a straight-out goof yet again. I've wanted to stand up for this guy, but he's stuck. I don't understand the way he thinks about baseball.
Let me ask you this, Ryan, just about John Schneider real quick. I'm genuinely curious, because you and I have had this conversation before when you've called in about John Schneider, and I know you're not a huge fan. If you had to make the managerial change next year, you think it's someone inside the organization, or do you think they kind of have to go outside the organization?
I got to be honest with you. I think we have to go outside the organization. It's kind of like when you eat your favorite meal over and over again, but then it becomes stale. You kind of have to change it up. What's happening inside our organization right now has gone stale. The culture is stale. And I think it's just time to bring something else in. It doesn't hurt. Like, why? Why aren't we? I really don't get it. Like, I really don't understand it. You can bring in anyone. Bring in a former player. Bring in Joe Maddon. Bring in anyone. Just try something new. Because what's in our organization right now is just not cutting it. It's just not cutting it. It's not been cutting it for the entire Bo and Vladdy era. This isn't just a Ross Atkins problem. It's not just a Mark Shapiro problem. It's just a full-out system issue. I don't know how we fix it, but doing the exact same thing over and over again is not the solution. So I got to see John Schneider go, and then obviously if John Schneider goes, that's four managers under this current staff.
Yeah.
So they have to go as well. Everyone's been saying, this is not just me. I'm just saying what every single other person that fills that stadium is saying as well. So I don't know. We're all pretty fed up. Why is Dalton Sparsho leading off, dude? Come on.
Hey, Dave,
Lucas and his sexy beard should have been the first thing we saw today, not Dalton Sparsho.
I do appreciate the call, Ryan. I very much do. And I will say, by the way, as a fellow beard guy, Nathan Lucas did have a very majestic beard. It's true. Tom should grow a beard. Tom's only ever had a mustache. I think you guys should grow beards too. No, Nathan Lucas, I'm not sure I would put him batting leadoff or near the top right away, mainly because I wanted to see him do a little bit more. Actually, you know what? Nathan Lucas made a pretty great catch out there to ultimately save a run. Ultimately, unfortunately, didn't matter because the Blue Jays scored literally no runs in a 2-0 loss. But hey, I mean, it saved a run because if he doesn't make that catch going off of 1 foot, leaping grab midair, comes back down. There was a sac fly. Santana scores on the sac fly from third, but I mean, I thought that was a very athletic play from a guy. I mean, a 30-year-old, like, again, quote unquote prospect. But yeah, I thought that was very impressive. He gets a hit as well, his first hit of the season in this game. So again, I was like, in a very low level impressed by Nathan Lucas, but I'm not sure I would put him leading off. I will say for Dalton Sparsho, to give the guy a little bit of a break, he has not been hitting particularly well for the vast majority of the season. I think there was a period of time, if you guys remember, when it was early in the year, might have been in maybe the end of April, beginning of May, thereabouts, when the Jays were on the West Coast. They were playing the Padres in San Diego at Petco Park. And I think Dalton Sparsho, he went yard. He was really hot at the plate. He was making all the plays all around the outfield as he has for so much of the year. And Dalton Sparsho, I got to say, Sparsho, at the time, we thought had a chance to overcome what we saw last season. And then, like, after that, he just didn't really hit very consistently for the rest of the year. He clearly has power, but it's just they have not been able to harness it, again, super consistently. Here's the thing, though. Coming into tonight's game, all right, in the month of August, from August 2nd to August 29th, he has 88 ABs, 99 plate appearances. All right? He has a batting average. He's not hitting a ton. He has 8 RBI and 3 home runs, essentially, from August 2nd to 29th. He has a batting average of .284. He's actually getting on base like more than he did for a good chunk of the season. In the month, he has an OPS of .800. That's pretty darn good. I think that's why I think they're trying to get something from Sparsho, right? I think that really is. I think in an ideal lineup, I think Ryan is absolutely correct. In an ideal lineup, you're not batting Sparsho too. For example, or pardon me, tonight he was batting leadoff because George Springer wasn't in the lineup. But like, you, if Springer was batting today, you'd probably have seen some Sparsho bat too, because we've seen that pretty a lot recently, I would say, pretty recently. But if that's the case, then you know, if as Barker wants the two thumpers, as he's been saying, if you get two thumpers, you can construct your lineup a little more traditionally. Like, you're probably still putting George Springer leadoff if he's comfortable there. And again, I don't think that's a fait accompli. It's like not a done deal necessarily. But I think if you're talking about next year's lineup and it's Springer 1, Vladdy 3, then ultimately what you're going to do is you can easily put in someone else up there batting number two. You can get someone behind Vladdy to help him a little bit, to help him see some better pitches, more quality pitches, let's say, for Vladdy. And that would solve a lot of the problems, because then, again, I've said this a million times about Varsho, even if he is streaky, even if you're not getting what you've gotten from Varsho in August for much of the season, you can get by with that. You just can't have him be one of like six guys who are hitting like that, which is what you've seen from the Jays for most of the season, right? But then, and that's why ultimately it's tough for Varsho, because he's kind of stuck in a place where he probably shouldn't be, but there's not a lot of choices to be putting up there. Again, I don't know if the alternative is Lucas, and I'm generally fine with it for a couple of days, but you're right. I mean, if you're looking at a team that has more power available to them, I'd probably go elsewhere. 590, name and location. There was a text here. Here it is, from Steve in Toronto. Steve says, who do you think the Jays will call up in September for the two additional roster spots? That's from Steve. I think it's a good question, mainly because there are a lot of options. I mean, Lucas actually would have been a pick of mine, because I wanted to see him be called up for such a long period of time, largely because he's been hitting pretty well in the minors. And again, Dan Shulman was talking about this with Ailish and Jesse earlier on the Fan pregame here in Toronto. But, you know, Dan made the good point that ultimately, Nathan Lucas probably got squeezed a little bit because of the left-handedness of his bat, right? You got Kiermaier, who was left-handed at the time. We're talking about the spring, you know. But Kiermaier, Varsho, both left-handed. So if you're pinch hitting for any of those guys, you probably actually do want a right-handed bat, right? Springer obviously is in there as well, who is a right-handed bat. But it just, I think that probably harmed him. So he didn't really have a lot of chances to get called up. David Schneider was the fourth outfielder for much of the year, and then he kind of only really struggled starting in June. And then when there was finally a chance for Lucas to get called up, he had the thumb injury, and then he got injured, essentially. So I do wonder, ultimately, who could replace him now that he has been called up. I kind of wonder if it's an easier conversation just because Bo's still on the IL. If you don't bring Bo back until September, I mean, September starts on Sunday, and Bo almost certainly is not going to be back with the Jays by Sunday. So if he's not back for another week or week plus, in theory, I would think you could just call up, like bring Bo back to the roster and just call up one more guy, right? Like you could just make the decision, Bo and someone. And that someone could be an Alan Roden. It could be a Josh Kasevich. Could be a Jonathan Class A. I kind of think it might be Class A, honestly. Like, he's one of their highest ranked prospects immediately, right after they got him in the trade. So if that's the case, then I kind of wonder if it could be Class A. Maybe if you feel that's too much of the same kind of thing, because Lucas is still up here, Lucas could always go back down. Roden has been hitting the cover off the baseball, certainly, so he could get a look. And I know a lot of people would ask, well, what about pitchers? Certainly Jake Bloss, there's a chance for Jake Bloss to come up here as well. So I'm a little less bullish on Jake Bloss, if only because the last time out a couple nights ago, 1 2/3, 8 earned runs, over 60 pitches thrown. Not great. So I think ultimately maybe we don't see Jake Bloss right away. I suppose there's still a real good chance you see Jake Bloss before the end of the season. But ultimately, I'm going to say you probably see more position players right now. I do wonder how the Blue Jays will handle the pitching rotation, the starting rotation going forward, because they have been pretty adamant that they do want more of a rest day for guys, if possible. Like, they want to try and give a lot of the guys rest down the stretch. So maybe they do call up Bloss. Maybe it's someone else. Maybe they just roll with Ryan Yarbrough. And frankly, if they roll with Ryan Yarbrough, based on what you've seen from Yarbrough in the last couple of starts, you know, quote unquote starts, I know they're not actual starts, but his last two appearances, let's call them. If it's Burr and Yarbrough to start, they start a game every six games going forward. And again, the next week, I think, will prove really interesting to see what they choose to do because of the off day on Monday and the off day on Thursday. But we'll see what they do. But again, if you don't want to go to Bloss, you're probably all right with Burr and Yarbrough. We have a couple minutes left here. Before we go, really quickly on the offense. End of the game, we did see a bit of a battle against the flamethrower Yoan Duran. Will Wagner against Duran was kind of fun to watch. Wagner fouling off some 100 plus mile an hour pitches, some fastballs, and then he gets aboard with the single. I think there's still some more there from Will Wagner ultimately when it comes to what you can get from him going forward. Again, I just kind of, like we laid out, with all the log jam in the infield, how much are you really going to see any of them pitch going forward? Or pardon me, any of them play in the field going forward? Because you need to find spaces for Horwitz, Wagner, let's say Javis Schneider, if you want to see him play a little bit more, Ernie Clement, Leo Jimenez, You know what I mean? So you kind of have to find a spot for all of them. But I would like to see a little bit more from Will Wagner. I don't know if that means DHing Vladdy a little bit and then going to Horwitz at second, or Horwitz at first, pardon me, and then Will Wagner at second. I think I'd be okay with that. But hey, I appreciate the call, certainly from Ryan. Appreciate all the texts. Lots of texts tonight. Certainly keep those coming whenever we're on. We're back tomorrow. Appreciate you being with me on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Brockville and Cornwall, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho. That does it for us. Like I said, we are out of here. I'm actually here all weekend long with Nick Ashbourne. He's with me Saturday and Sunday. But hey, wherever you are, enjoy the start of your long weekend, everyone. Make it a good one to wrap up August. We're back tomorrow. Talk to you later.